Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter Number 2, Divinity and Devotional Service, Text Number 6.
What chapter is it?
1-2, Chapter 2 of the First Canto, Verse Number 6. Saha.
Saha.
Tha, vai.
Pumsam.
Para.
Dharma,
dharma
yatha,
yatha
bhakti,
bhakti
adhokshajay
ahaituki
apratihata
yaya
atma
supersedati
sabai pungsang
paro dharma
Yato bhakti radhokshajay
Yato bhakti radhokshajay
Ahai tuki apratihata
Ahai tuki apratihata
Yayatma suprasidati
Yayatma suprasidati
Savai pungsam paro dharmo
Savai pungsam paro dharmo
Yato bhakti radhokshajay
Yato bhakti radhokshajay
Ahai tuki apratihata
Yayatma
suprasidati
Yayatma suprasidati
Savai pumsa paro dharma
Savai pumsam paro dharma
Yato bhakti
radhokshajay
Ahai
tuki apratihata
Yayatma suprasidati
Savai pungsam paro dharmo
Savai pungsam paro dharmo
Yato bhaktir radhokshajay
Ahai tuki apratihata
Yayatma suprasidati
Savai pungsam paro dharmo Yato bhakti radhokshajay
Ahai tuki apratihata
Yayatma suprasidati Saha
That
Vai,
certainly,
pungsam,
for mankind,
paraha,
sublime,
dharma,
occupation,
yata,
by which,
bhakti,
devotional service,
adhokshajay,
unto the transcendence,
ahai tuki,
causeless.
Apratihata,
unbroken,
yaya,
by which,
atma,
the self,
supersedati,
completely satisfied.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity,
is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord.
Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self-purport.
In this statement, Sri Suta Goswami answers the first question of the sages of Naimisharanya. The sages asked him to summarize the whole range of revealed scriptures and present the most essential part so that fallen people, or the people in general, might easily take it up. The Vedas prescribe two different types of occupation for the human being. One is called the pravritti marg, or the path of sense enjoyment, and the other is called the nivritti marg, or the path of renunciation. The path enjoyment is inferior, and the path of sacrifice for the supreme cause is superior. The material existence of a living being is a diseased condition of actual life. Actual life is spiritual existence or Brahma-Bhuta existence, where life is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. Material existence is temporary, illusory, and full of miseries. There is no happiness at all. There's just a futile attempt to get rid of the miseries, and temporary cessation of misery is falsely called happiness. Therefore, the path of progressive material enjoyment, which is temporary, miserable, and illusory, is inferior. Interesting, progressive material enjoyment, Prabhupada is saying. Interesting. But devotional service to the Supreme Lord, which leads one to eternal, blissful, and all-cognizant life, is called the superior quality of occupation. This is sometimes polluted when mixed with the inferior quality, for example, of devotional adoption of devotional service for material gain, is certainly an obstruction to the progressive path of renunciation. Renunciation or abnegation for ultimate good is certainly a better occupation than enjoyment in the diseased condition of life. Sense enjoyment only aggravates the symptoms of disease and increases its duration. Therefore, devotional service of the Lord must be pure in quality, that is, without the least desire for material enjoyment. One should therefore accept the superior quality of occupation in the form of devotional service of the Lord, without any tinge of unnecessary desire, fruit of action, and philosophical speculation. This alone can lead one to perpetual solace in his service. We have purposely denoted dharma as occupation because the root meaning of the word dharma is that which sustains one's existence. A living being's sustenance of existence is to coordinate his activities with his eternal relation with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Krishna is the central pivot of living beings, and he is the all-attractive living entity or eternal form amongst all other living beings or eternal forms. Each and every living being has his eternal form in the spiritual existence. And Krishna is the eternal attraction for all of them. Krishna is the complete whole, and everything else is his part and parcel. The relation is one of the servant and the served. It is transcendental and is completely distinct from our experience in material existence. This relation of servant and the served is the most congenial form of intimacy. One can realize it as devotional service progresses. Everyone should engage himself in that transcendental loving service of the Lord, even in the present conditional state of material existence. That will gradually give one the clue to actual life and please him to complete satisfaction. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakraya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. It's interesting how the word progressive pops up throughout this purport. Prabhupada is saying the path of progressive material enjoyment, that one really is an amazing statement. Because we would normally think that this path of material enjoyment is a very regressive path, going backwards, you see. Going deeper and deeper into the lower modes of nature. We would find that to be the actual nature of a regressive. So how Prabhupada can say progressive material enjoyment? How can we understand that statement? That's an interesting question to ponder. Mm-hmm. When Prabhupada says there's actually no happiness at all, there's just a futile attempt to get rid of the miseries. Futile means it's useless. You're trying to do it, but it's futile. It's useless. It's a waste of time. You try to get rid of the miseries. It's just like they install a wall of our carpet, you know, in a house, and there's a bubble in it, a place where the carpet comes up. So you think, let me just push down, but it comes up somewhere else. No matter what you do to get rid of it, unless you take the carpet out and reinstall it, you know, take it, rip it up and cut it somewhere, find out where you mismeasured it, where it didn't fit the room, you see. Then you can get the bubble out. But if you just try to press down the bubble here, it comes up somewhere else. So this is the nature of material enjoyment or material suffering, which it actually is. There's no such thing as material enjoyment, ultimately. We falsely call the temporary cessation of misery happiness, as the example is given of the the medieval form of punishment, where they a dunking stool, where they take the criminal and they put him under the water, and they leave him under the water on the dunking stool until he's practically dead. And they bring him up for a second, he gets a gasp of air. He thinks, now I'm enjoying, you see. And they put him back down again. So when the misery lets up a little bit, we think, ah, yes, now I'm enjoying. But that's not enjoyment. You're in a miserable position. You're being punished, brutally punished by the threefold miseries, the fourfold miseries. And if that wasn't enough, then there's the seven whips also, you see. We're just being, you know, constantly whipped around, beaten up, smashed by these miseries. And then it lets up for a second, like, ah, I'm enjoying. Listen. So again, how can Prabhupada say progressive material enjoyment? Of course, they think it's progressive. There's no doubt. Yes, we are progressing in our advancement. We have central air and heat. We have mobile phones. We have wireless laptops. We have so many things. And, you know, soon they will figure out a way to put a stop to death. We just have to live long enough. One scientist has predicted that. In fact, he's making sure he doesn't die, taking his vitamins. He's driving very carefully because he knows in a few years they'll find a way to keep us, to stop death. Some little thing they can put in your bloodstream. He's convinced that they'll put a stop to death, so he's just making sure he can live long enough to become immortal. That's his goal. So, they certainly think it's progressive, but Prabhupada isn't saying so-called progressive. He's saying the path of progressive material enjoyment. Of course, there are progressive types of material enjoyment according to the Vedic system, where you can go to the heavenly planets. And you could say that's progressive in one sense. You progress from here to Svargaloka. That could be called progressive material enjoyment. So that remains a mystery. Why Prabhupada uses the word progressive material enjoyment? That remains mysterious. Actual progress, Prabhupada is just describing here at the end, he says, one who has realized in devotional service progresses. You see, that's actual progression. Sure. Why is it progressive to engage in devotional service? The materialist would not call this progress, getting up early in the morning and having Mangal Arati. They would not say this is progress. At all. And so this is just foolishness. You've regressed. You know, the cult leader has come and he's brainwashed you. Now you're regressing into this primitive practice of worshipping God, like the aborigines. You know, the lightning would come and they would bow down to the lightning. You see, so you've regressed, you see. They would say you have regressed into a less intelligent mode of existence. Some guru came and he put a spell on you and now you have regressed. So why can we argue, on what basis can we argue that this is actually progressive? Do we have any philosophical grounds or is it just some kind of blind faith? So on what philosophical basis can we actually, you know, logical, scientific basis, can we argue that this is actually progressive, what we're doing? Well, the real fact of the matter is that in spite of all the progress of modern-day science, the progressive material enjoyment, it is all finished at the time of death. Even in Brahma Loka, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, Punaravartana Arjuna, Mamu Pechita Kaunteya, Punarjanma Devijate. Even to the highest planet, he said, from the highest down to the lowest, all are places of misery. Why repeated birth and death take place there? in spite of all of their hype about conquering death very soon, just around the corner, just give us another $10 million and we will give you immortality. Have faith in us scientists. We are your true well-wishers. You see? In spite of all of the hype, they have not done. If you were a Mercedes-Benz dealer and I came in and I said, I'd like to buy that Mercedes, that $90,000 Mercedes, and here, I'll give you one check. And I don't have the funds in the bank today, but tomorrow the funds will be there. You can trust me. Here, take my check. Give me the keys. Will you give me the Mercedes?
No.
Yes. So, why we are giving the scientists... Why are you putting so much faith in the scientists when they are promising us immortality? You see, it is simply blind faith. Trust no future, however pleasant. This is intelligence. Intelligent person is not carried away by propaganda. He's not razzle-dazzled by some pie-in-the-sky hype. He wants something that's concrete. He wants it now. If you have something good, you give it to me right now. If you have something actually to give me, you give it to me now. So the Krishna consciousness process is indeed progressive because you don't have to wait to get the result. You can get it now. Actually, Krishna consciousness is here and now. There was that, of course, the Mayavadis had that book, Be Here and Now. But they don't know what to be in the here and now. That's the problem. They think, I will be God in the here and now. So it doesn't work. But our philosophy is that you should be Krishna conscious in the here and now. And if we actually do that, if we actually plug in to the transcendental platform right here, right now, then in this mood described here, Ahaitakiya pratiyata, without any motive and solidly fixed, no interruption, not like on and off sort of Krishna consciousness, you know, on today, off tomorrow, no. Solidly fixed at every minute, committed, I'm going to stick with this process at every second. I'm not going to let my mind go away for even a second, I'm just going to stay always rooted, solidly situated in Krishna consciousness. If we focus our attention in that way and become determined and do this, the result will be that we'll become ecstatics. Anandamayo bhyasad, the nature of the living entity is that he is blissful. So that actual bliss comes by reconnecting, but first of all, understanding who we actually are, and then being who we actually are, as we were saying last night. Know who you are and be who you are. We simply have to reconnect with our actual identity, and the result is we actually taste a happiness. We experience a transcendental sweetness. We gain an understanding which is beyond anything that we can have in this material world. Truth works. If Krishna consciousness is actually the truth, then we should be experiencing something when we chant Hare Krishna. We should be tasting some nectar which is beyond anything of this material world, you see. If Krishna consciousness is genuine, then there should be a real experience there. It shouldn't just be some well-off in the future sort of a thing. It should be something that we're tasting right now. There should be complete satisfaction. Of course, it is a gradual process. But there should be some transcendental experience to some degree, even in the beginning. Otherwise, how can we go forward? How can we be progressive? How can we continue unless we're tasting something right now? So the real secret of how to do that is to not try to enjoy, but try to give enjoyment. That's the insider secret in this regard. Instead of trying to taste the bliss, try to give bliss. like the gopis, that Krishna, he had headache, and he said, he told his messenger, I need the dust from the feet of my devotees to cure my headache. So the messenger was going to find someone who can give. He went to some smarta brahmins. Krishna has a headache. Can you give the dust from your feet to cure the headache of Krishna? No, we will go to hell. If the dust from our feet goes onto the Lord's head, we will go to hell. We will never do such a thing. So he went down the road a little further to the gopis. He told them the same thing. They said, yes, take the dust. Anything for curing Krishna's headache. Aren't you afraid you will go to hell? Oh, well, it's all right. We don't mind. Just Krishna's headache must be cured. You see, this is the secret. Don't try to taste the bliss. Try to give the bliss to others. Try to make whatever devotees you're associating with, always try to make them happy and satisfied in all respects. You see? Whatever devotees you're associated with. Try to make, actually that's even more important than Krishna. That's how we please Krishna. Through the medium of Guru and Vaishnavas. Anande bolo hadi bhajavrindavan Shri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majayaman. Ecstatic, Naratam is saying, ecstatically chant Hare Krishna, worship Shri Vrindavan Dham, and meditate on the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnavas. So it's not that we only worship our spiritual master, we worship all the Vaishnavas actually, according to Naratam Das Thakur. So, this is how we will give our love to Krishna, by giving our love to our spiritual master, by giving our love to the Vaishnavas. By always seeing that the devotees are happy. If we always see that the devotees are happy, my spiritual master is happy, then Krishna will definitely be happy. And then we will taste the bliss. If you want to taste the bliss, you have to give the bliss. That's the bottom line. Don't think that you can taste, you can not make the devotees happy and be happy yourself. It doesn't work. We have to make the devotees happy that we're associated with, and then we can be happy. If we try to be happy, even if we try to be enjoy Krishna consciousness on our own, it is actually a kripana mentality, miserly mentality. Everyone knows miser. He cannot be happy. Even though he's accumulated so much money, he cannot be happy. Miser, you know the other word miserable, and miser is the same word. Miser means miserable. Miserable means miser. You see? Miser means he's only thinking of himself. He doesn't want to give to others. In Vrindavan, there's so many da's. There's Jashoda, Kirti, da. Da means give. One who gives kirti, one who gives jasho, you see, one who gives fame is known as jashoda, the giver of fame. So this is the Vrindavan mood. In the material world, everyone's a taker. There's too many takers in this world and not enough givers. A Vaishnava is a giver, always wants to give, 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 give. Give wisdom and give happiness. Give loving service. When this giving mood is there, you always want to see that the devotees are happy and satisfied and peaceful in all respects. At every minute, every second the devotees are happy, then automatically you will taste that bliss. So, we have just 5 minutes for questions. Let's see if there's any questions. Yes.
You mentioned earlier in the lecture that there's threefold misery, fourfold miseries, and then the seven whips.
Yeah.
Well, I know the three and the four, but what's the seven whips?
They are given in Krishna book. I don't remember the hunger, thirst, lamentation. That's three of them. It's okay. In Krishna book. Near the beginning of Krishna book. Huh? Hunger, thirst, lamentation. Illusion. There's some overlap with the fourfolds. and the threefolds, but they're definitely there. So if somehow you can evade the threefolds and the fourfolds, and the seven whips will get you. I mean, you just can't escape. Like they say in Texas, if the rednecks don't get you, the mosquitoes will. So somehow or other, they'll get you. You know, the miseries will catch up with you.
Is that what the devotees say?
Is
that what the devotees say?
Oh, I don't know. That's just something. I may have made that up myself, but... Yes.
Progressive material and sense qualification. People are getting grossly engrossed in the sense.
Yeah, but I mean, it's progressive in the sense that they're becoming progressively more and more ignorant.
More and more going down into the, just like people are getting into sex, although they see that there is so much AIDS and all that, and still they're getting into it.
Right. Now they're going down. The ignorance is, they're progressing in pathway of ignorance. That's right. You know, it's becoming more gross, all progressively more and more grotesque all the time, their sense enjoyment. You see, now what does a kid do for kicks now, you see? Now he takes a gun to school and starts shooting, for example. I mean, it's really going grotesque.
Just like in high school, they have introduced that. What kind of dance?
Oh, yeah, there's a new kind of dancing in the high schools. I heard about this. What they do... is they rub their bodies, they have their clothes on, but they'll rub, you know, the boy will go up to the girl as if they're having intercourse, and they'll just rub in each other, as if they're having sex. And they do that at the school, and that's part of them, they play the music, and they get out on the floor,
like,
and they do that as it's a type of dancing. What do they call it?
Dirty
dancing. Yeah, this is...
They have given some special name in America.
There's some name, but yeah, this kind of stuff is going on.
I mean, they are saying that child abuse, and what is this now? Adult abuse? What is it called?
That?
No, there is a child abuse.
Child abuse.
Saying that there should not be child abuse. Now this, they are allowing that in the high schools. So what kind of, isn't this abuse?
School abuse.
Yeah.
Abusing the school.
Well, Prabhupada calls school slaughterhouse.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, it's just progressively coming worse, but that's an advantage for us, you see. Just like when the water became more and more polluted, so then the bottled water industry came up because the water was so dirty. Otherwise, they wouldn't have they wouldn't come up. So the more the consciousness becomes polluted, the more the people will come out not being able to handle it anymore. They get so bad, they'll want some, they will be looking for pure consciousness.
Do you think so that will happen? Because people
absolutely, are absolutely.
People are into sense gratification.
Absolutely. Not there will. I can absolutely guarantee you, you can mark my words, that as the Kali Yuga becomes worse and worse, there will be those people who are inclined towards goodness will become more desperate to actually achieve self-realization. Mm. You see, people who are not satisfied with passion and ignorance, who are sattvic in nature, as the passion and ignorance gets worse and worse and more all devouring, they will be...
This is my call. I call to see where the self from this.
Just wait. Mm. They will demand... they'll just be very, very intensely, looking for genuine spiritual enlightenment. That will happen. You can mark my words. This will be the result. And we the Krishna Consciousness Movement will be there to give them that information, that guidance, that inspiration, that blessing. How to actually become a self-realized being, spiritually enlightened being, who is transcendental to all the madness that is ever progressively engulfing the entire human society. See what I'm saying? Questions more?
I have a probably very big question. Do we have really limited time, or?
I will give you some time, Mataji.
Okay. You know, I heard you say it sometimes that wife is protection for husband.
The wife definitely is a protection for the husband.
I understand, like, spiritually, like, be a team and, you know. But, you know, so many things out there, so I would like you...
So many what?
So many things.
Things like, you know, another
woman coming in.
She knows. So I just, you know, because I'm doing a lot of counseling and many couples come to me and they like argue between each other. It's what I say, go, wife have to protect husband. Can you elaborate on this little?
The wife is described as a fortress. The husband, see, a man's nature, let's face it. I mean, you know, what can we say? Men have this tendency to want to enjoy many, many women. It's a fact. He's got his wife, but he's, you know, his mind is, that one looks pretty good, you know. That's a man's nature. He has a nature to enjoy many women. So that's a degradation for the man, you see. So the woman has to capture him by her loving service to where, and she has to, you know, that he becomes, that he basically, in a sense, like a dog on the leash, he can't run here and he can't run there. She's got her husband on the leash of her love. By her loving service, she's got him on a leash. He is a dog that's on a leash. He can't run free to go after this she-dog and that she-dog. She's got him on a leash where he's tied up to where, you know, he's completely absorbed in his relationship with the wife to where there's no time for him to go to anyone else. Basically, she's got him completely tied up 24 hours a day and in the marriage relationship. So this is a practical thing. You know, she's cooks very nice prasadam. She's always there encouraging the husband in his devotional service. In this way, the husband also has to be very obedient and follow the Vedic principles. Not that he has to, on his own also, he has to curb down this tendency to go after other women. He has to not associate with other women, especially not in, alone. That's the principles of brahmachari he must follow in relation with other women besides his wife. He must be a brahmachari, not that just, you know, like some karmi. The principles of brahmachari are very, very essential for the marriage to be happy and successful. That's why it says one should see every other woman other than one's wife as mother. And one should never be alone with any woman except for one's wife. The Vedic injunction is so strong that you shouldn't even be alone with your own daughter. And one devotee said, how is that possible? He thought that was ridiculous. He couldn't understand how the Vedas could say you shouldn't be alone with your daughter, but then one devotee fell down and had illicit sex with his own daughter in our movement. And the child abuse, he became, you know, he had to go through the child abuse thing, you know, because he had sex with his own daughter. And so these principles of not being alone with a woman. We've seen so many marriages broken because devotees weren't strict. So one actually has to be very strict in following the Vedic principles. They protect us. And the wife is a great asset for a Krishna conscious wife is actually the greatest asset. Because the man's nature to want to have a woman's company is satisfied by having the wife. There is a certain nature the man wants to, just it comes from Krishna. He enjoys having women around. Men enjoy women. So that nature is there. Every man has a tendency to want to enjoy women. So if he has a Krishna conscious wife, then he can get the satisfaction of a woman's company. At the same time, he's protected from unrestricted association with women, which will lead to degradation.
Then another question arises.
Yeah.
So the man's tendency is to enjoy, and many women.
Yeah.
Then why would it be mentioned? Well, answer is there anyway. That the woman is considered more lustier than the man.
Yeah, that is also stated. Actually, there's statements that make everyone look bad in the Vedas. In these Vedic teachings, the women are also described as being very lusty. So the tendency is there. Both men and women are very lusty. That's a fact. So the thing works the other way too. A woman may have this tendency to flirt with other men, and she has to stop that and just be dedicated to her husband. Not that she wants to go around and talk with this man and talk with that man. She has to be very... A Vedic woman doesn't want, actually, she's shy about associating with other men. She only wants to associate with her husband, actually.
But then, how is the wife supposed to protect the husband when another woman may be flirting around with him?
They both have to be Krishna conscious, and they both have to protect each other. It's a mutual thing, actually. The husband, they both have to protect each other.
So it's okay to, for wife come to husband and say, you know, I don't think you're careful when this woman around.
Oh, the wife, yes, definitely. See, the woman has a tendency to be jealous if her husband's associating with other women. And that's good. That can be, that's actually, that woman's nature of jealousy, that, you know, and they say, what is it, and anger, the two breasts of women are envy, and what's the other one in the Bhagavatam? A woman has a tendency to be envious, and that actually can be used in Krishna's service, that she's envious of her husband's associating with other women, and that can be utilized to check his unrestricted, you know, unrestrictedly associating and becoming degraded. I was counseling a married couple in Estonia, and the husband had a tendency to wanted to talk with all the women, and the wife is very much disturbed by that. And she didn't want, it was other woman, it was a Brahmacharini in the ashram who liked to associate with her husband. And this made the wife very, very angry. And the Brahmacharini thought that, well, in fact, when she was serving prasadam, the wife, she would be serving prasadam by all the devotees. The wife was so extreme, she didn't want this girl to serve her husband. I mean, she was really extreme. But I said, you should go along with the wife's, whatever the wife says, you go along with it. And just accept it, because that's her right. She's protecting her husband from getting...
She's protecting her also.
And protecting the girl also, that's right. I told her, you know, that's the wife has a right to do that. You just have to go along with it. Whether you think it's unreasonable, doesn't matter. You have to go along with the wife. You have to go along with the wife.
Because woman, we saying, you know, like he has ex-wife. And when you got married, she started do some tricks. And he didn't understand. But I said, I'm a woman. I used to do these tricks. Sometime.
Women have this certain, my experience is that women do have a certain intelligence that men don't have.
Yeah.
So the man has to learn how to listen to his wife, because she has some, a female psychology has certain ways of understanding things that men don't have. So a man will be very smart if he can learn how to listen to his wife.
We used to have this problem. And you're right, because I accept her authority on this.
Yeah.
And we used to fight, and then I said, well, maybe you're right, you know, maybe I'm just not seeing it. So I accepted it on that, and things have gone much better. And sometimes we see that some well-intentioned lady, devotee lady, will want to serve me. And I say, well, no, it's not proper. If you want to serve me through my wife. You know, ask her. And the same way, if I need to say something to some lady, and tell my wife and ask her to tell the lady this way.
We have to protect ourselves. The wife is there as a protection, because the material nature is so powerful that we can easily be carried away by lust. That's the reality. Lust can easily carry away. I mean, it's been the downfall of many of our sannyasis, gurus. I mean, they fell down because of lust.
It's another thing with women, because it's said that each woman has to be protected. In our society, many women don't have fathers or husbands, and you know, all the sons. So, and you know, because it's nature of woman be protected.
Yeah.
And if they don't not, they're looking for protection.
Right.
And they're looking for, like my husband, he's very kind and very, you know, and in the past they would happen, you know, he'll just kind to some woman, but they take it wrong.
Well, that's why the husband and wife have to be a preaching team, to where they feel they come to the two of you. You see, maybe some woman is attracted by his preaching, but you have to be seen as a team. It's like, you know, the wife is the better half. You have to act as they can still do that, but not him alone. Him and you together. You see, as a preaching team.
Problem, especially with leaders who have to assay with women, and they have wives. And last time when I went, I counseled one couple, and you know, I'm so happy this time when I saw them, the husband understood. He tell his wife, oh, you're just jealous, you're crazy, you know, this and such and such and such. But when, you know, we talk about, discuss this, and now he understood this, and they're doing good, you know, in relationships.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the wife has to have, the wife cannot be, the wife has to be allowed to, she has to have power. If the wife is disempowered and just say, okay, you're just a servant, just do what you're told, then the husband is making a big mistake. The wife will naturally be in the mood of service if she's given the proper respect that's due to her.
It's what a joke or anecdote about man, devotee, he said, oh, my wife, she's not Devahuti, you know. She's not like Devahuti. And, you know, you ask husband, are you cardamom?
Right.
So you, in order to your wife be Devahuti, you have to be cardamom.
Right.
Because
that's right.
He gave, you know,
exactly.
How I, you know.
That's right.
You know, Kardama Muni gave his wife whatever he needed. You know,
that's right.
She asked for a son, children, you know.
That's right.
He's not just, you know.
We shouldn't expect the wife, that's right. The husband should not expect the wife to be something that he's not. The husband is actually the leader according to Vedic culture. He is meant to be the actual leader. He is meant to be the real source of spiritual strength. The wife can be inspired by him, etc., etc. The husband can't expect the wife to be more advanced than he is. It's said that the wife actually gets the spiritual progress, whatever spiritual advancement the husband is, she inherits that. So it's the husband's duty to actually be more spiritually advanced, more sense-controlled than the wife. He's supposed to be the leader. Why is it said that the male form is more beneficial for self-realization? He's supposed to be the actual leader. He should be the repository of strong, fixed-up Krishna consciousness that the wife can plug into and get enlivened by. That's the husband is meant to be the leader.
But you see, many husbands, many men, they don't have these qualities, but they say, wife have to listen to me. Because she, my wife, she has to listen.
You can't artificially, you cannot dictate, you know, submission. You have, Prabhupada said, yeah, here's how he said, He said, you cannot demand respect, you have to command respect. That means by your qualities that people will naturally respect you. The husband cannot demand the wife's respect. That will never work. He has to command it by being such a great sadhu that the wife naturally respects him. You see, that's the position. Anyone who is demanding, that is materialistic. Demanding.
I think that in Krishna conscious, we have, I don't know if it's same divorces like in Karmis or more. I think
we have more divorces in ISKCON than the Karmis have.
Yes. So and
which means our movement is has not really become. This is not the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in that sense. It's the International Society for Divorce Consciousness.
I think it's becoming lesser now.
Becoming less now? Oh, that's good. Yeah, we have to actually... the way I looked at it, my parents never even yelled at... I never heard them even raise their voices against each other the whole time I was a child. I never heard them argue with each other, ever. And they were just... karmis. So when I joined this movement and I got married, I knew, no matter what happens, if I can't hold my marriage together, then that will be admitting that Krishna consciousness is not what I've been saying it is. I have to make this marriage work no matter what, because otherwise I'll be defeated by my meat-eating Christian relatives. That they have what they have is better than what I have. I was forced to be able to, to manifest successful marriage just for the sake of preaching. So every devotee has to have that mood of sacrifice. As Tamal Krishna Goswami said, show me a successful marriage whose middle name is not compromise. You see? It has to be a compromise. The husband has to be willing to compromise with the wife, and the wife has to be willing to compromise with the husband. Not that my way or the highway philosophy. Either you take my way or get on the highway. You see, not like that. Compromise is that... So just like now, there's some compromising going on between me and Mataji. She's giving me the signal, you see. And I have to compromise. Even though you want the class to go on, I have to cut it short now. Because we do have a schedule and she's reminding me. We've gone 20 minutes over time already. So
I find it very nice that your wife, every time you check what's next, you look to your wife and she's the one that's coordinating your schedule.
She's my manager. I look at it like this. As a spiritual master is getting more and more disciples around the world, in one sense he'd like a prestigious position, like a famous, prestigious sort of position. But I always think about the Beatles, that they became very famous and very prestigious, but they had a manager, George Epstein, who was always, who told them, well, you have to cut your hair like this, you have to wear these little suits and ties like this. He ordered them what to do. He was the manager and he orders, okay, you do this, you do that. So they worked under the manager. They didn't do what they wanted, they did what the manager told them to do. So I see that Mataji is my manager. And to me, she's the manager and I just do what... I can sometimes disagree with her and say, but usually I do go along with her because she's 99% of the time right.
Well, I know that. In our case, I'm terrible time manager. She keeps me on time most of the time. But I'm sometimes a rebellious. My tendency is to be 30 minutes late everywhere I go.
So yes, I not only time, but in all ways, I take Mataji's guidance, and because she has very good. She came from a very strict, from a Hindu family. She's worshiping Vishnu or Krishna from the childhood, so she has a very pious spirit, a very pure background compared to mine. So I always take advantage of her advancement in Krishna consciousness, because I have to be as advanced as I possibly can be to properly guide so many students all over the world. So That's why I keep her with me. She always says, well, just let me go to Vrindavan, you know, I won't be a botheration for you. But I say, no, that'll be more of a botheration. I'd rather, whatever botheration there may be of having to, you know, pay for two airline tickets instead of one, and, you know, some temples, they don't have a facility for a man and a wife, and I have to stay outside the temple with a house, in a household or couple's home. There's some, you know, if I was a traveling sannyasi, in many ways it would be easier, but then I would lose the advantage of all of her wisdom and realization, which is very powerful, which helps me a lot in what I'm doing. So I prefer to keep a wife instead of, you know, trading the wife in for a danda.
So she's your danda.
She is my danda. Yeah, I tell the sannyasi, I said, I have a better danda than you do. My danda is better than your danda. And actually, she is a danda. She, you know, tells me when I'm doing something wrong. So she, in that sense, she's also danda for me. She actually says, I don't think you should do it like this. You should do it like this. And it actually, she's usually right. So I've learned to take her advice because it helps me in my service. So now she's again giving me the word. All right, so we'll stop here. Kantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Prabhupada Ki Jai.